Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Welcome back to Killer Fun, where we explore the intersection of crime and entertainment every other week. I'm Christy, and today, I have an outtakes episode for you. Actually, I have the first of two outtakes episodes for you. So we're on a little bit of a hiatus. We had some holidays, and Jackie's taking a really intensive class this January, so we're having a little bit of a break, but that doesn't mean we don't have something new for you. We have all these outtakes from episodes that we've done over the past few months. I started going through these outtakes, and oh my gosh, there were more than I remembered. So I'm going to give you two episodes of outtakes. Today, I'm going to talk about Gattaca, Eileen Wuornos, Fear City, and Tickled. This first set is Gattaca, which was a movie that was all about genetic engineering and what kind of ramifications that might have in the future, both for humanity and crime-wise. We talk about how my son watched it at a private Christian school. What are the valuable lessons from this movie? We rethink something. We talk about identity theft, a movie mistake, how you should do your best even if you aren't the best, totally okay, autocorrect, and smoking in restaurants. Vincent's a borrowed ladder, and he's a degenerate. I'm sorry. Let me say that again.
Okay,
so side note, mm-hmm. This might be a little bonus material. Uh-huh. I mentioned to Cade that I was watching this, my son.
Yeah.
I know you know it's my son, but I thought the listeners might need to know. And I mentioned, you know, he might enjoy this movie because he's got a fairly sophisticated entertainment palette.
Yes, he does.
And he said, oh, I watched that. I'm like, you did? Yeah, in middle school. I'm like, you watched this at your private, uptight Christian middle school?
Interesting. Now, there's not really cussing in it. There's no, like, nasty violence. It's actually very...
But just the whole idea.
But the whole idea of it.
Like, I was really surprised. I was like,
I can think of, like, the one teacher who might have showed it.
Yeah, I can too.
We won't say her name.
No. But we appreciate her.
And yes,
her,
you're the best.
Work there. Yes. So.
It's funny because optimism, let me say that a word again. Wait.
So America really wants to ignore eugenics in our past. I'm going to visit eugenics one more time. But if we do that, we miss some valuable lessons. I don't remember what those valuable lessons are. I have to look at this.
That's why we highlight.
This is why I highlight. Eugenics was termed by Darwin's half cousin in 1883, which I didn't realize, Francis Galton. And he declared it viral creed full of hopefulness. Never mind. I'm not going to say that part. So I couldn't find anything about anyone selling their own identity. Because Jude Law sold his own identity.
Yeah.
I mean, that was
it wasn't stolen.
It was like his commodity that he had to sell. And he did on the black market. But on the black market, it's shockingly easy to buy your identity. And it's frighteningly inexpensive. You can basically get everything you need to online take over another person's identity for like $1,200.
Gee.
Yeah. Yeah. On the dark web. Yeah. Frightening.
So the other thing that they should have known by the time this movie came out that it wasn't true was that Vincent blames the scars on his legs from the cosmetic limb lengthening on a 1999 LeBaron convertible. There was no 1999 LeBaron convertible. They stopped making the convertibles in 1995.
Oh, whoops.
Yep. So even then, even in 1997 when this movie came out, they should have
caught that.
But, you know, it's an alternate universe. Yeah, I'm sure they were like, whatever.
Multiverse this mess.
Yeah, that's right.
Right?
And then there was one last thing. This guy, Jamie, on no last name, on Medium, says, never save anything for the swim back, and hit a little commentary.
Aww.
And it's just, I really liked this. I never saved anything for the swim back. This line stuck with me for the past 20 or so years because it meant doing your best no matter what. I will never be the best, but that doesn't mean that I should quit and abandon my dreams. So don't live your life scared. Don't live in fear. Don't compare yourself to others. Just do your best. And if you get beat up, keep swimming. And don't stop until you've reached your destination, the other side.
Aww.
And that's what matters, because you never saved anything for the swim back. And I was like, oh, that was such a nice way to look at it. That he wasn't swimming to go out and swim back. He was swimming to get to the other side.
Mm-hmm.
And I just thought that was good. And I hadn't thought of it that way.
It's a really
I
nice.
I really appreciate it.
It's really nice. Yeah. This is why autocorrect exists. although it's wrong, like, a lot.
Yeah.
It's really wrong a lot. It kind of irritates me. I'm going to go on a tangent. It irritates me because it doesn't actually correct it until you hit space to the next word. I tend to edit as I write. So before I hit space to the next word, I've looked at what I've just written, and I'm okay with it, and then I go on. And this happens naturally, and then what happens is it corrects it, and I don't know that it's changed it.
Yeah.
So you really have to relearn and go back and edit again. You can't do the whole edit while you type thing, unless you better make sure you hit space and then look at the words, right?
Yeah.
Like, it's just really kind of strange. And then what it thinks I'm trying to say sometimes.
It's never ducking. It's never ducking.
Yeah.
Let's just put it like that.
Yeah. And it's very weird. I don't know. Autocorrect is funny. I feel like we should have an autocorrect free day where like from in the morning, you have to turn autocorrect off.
Okay.
And then see how bad you are. And then like in the evening, you have to turn it on, but you're not allowed to fix what autocorrect tells you.
Oh, that's interesting.
I don't know why I want to do that. I'm just interested to see what kind of mayhem creates between all the text messages and emails and all the horrible things and what happens, because I think it would be very interesting to see what what devolves out of a wrong text. And
Jackie's showing us her antisocial side.
Yes, that is a complete antisocial behavior right there.
Be social and let me watch how you screw it up.
It's just funny.
So they smoked in the restaurant in this movie.
I know. It was like, wow, that's kind of weird. We haven't done that in a long time.
Yeah, we haven't. But did you know that there's no federal nationwide smoking ban in the U.S.? That they've left it all up to municipalities and jurisdictions to do that.
Yeah, do you remember going to restaurants smoking or non-smoking?
Do you remember riding in an airplane?
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. With my mom next to me.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Yep.
I'm like, yeah, that smoking section up there, there's, I mean, the little whatever curtain, it's doing nothing.
Nothing.
Nothing. All right, this next set of outtakes is on our episode all about Eileen Wuornos. Now, there's tons and tons and tons of different documentaries about her, but we just watched one and talked about it and kind of talked about some of the things that you might not necessarily know about her. Like, for example, in this set of outtakes, you'll hear about a marriage history that we often don't hear about. Jackie makes her very own conspiracy theory, and we talk about what sex work is like in the pandemic.
And I'm Jackie.
And today, I should say today again.
Yeah.
So then victim number five. Then victim number five's.
It's so funny how that
victim
works.
Number five's. All right. So the documentary only mentioned one diagnosis. I can't remember. And also at that hotel, room four in 2007 was a hideout for two men who were. Two men. All right. Did you have other stuff you wanted to talk about in psychology?
We could talk a little bit about the whole psyops if you wanted to go down that conspiracy.
I mean, it's up to you if you want to talk about it. I haven't done any research on that. So,
well,
you're okay. Like I have.
Well, just a little. Well, I just, well, maybe just a little bit. You can decide whether it's bonus material or whatever.
Okay. She was married at one point to a man who owned a yacht.
Yeah.
She moved down to Florida, married Louis Gratz Fell. They got married really fast, and she kept getting into fights at bars and assaulted Mr. Fell with his own cane. And so within weeks of their marriage, he filed a restraining order and got an annulment, which you're probably wise.
Probably wise.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. The documentary only recognized one diagnosis of profound delusional disorder, which Dr. Caddy found. But she had also been diagnosed by psychiatrists with borderline personality disorder and antisocial personality disorder, which makes complete sense.
Mm-hmm.
She was definitely mentally ill. She scored a 32 of 40 on the psychopathy checklist. She's a very, very ill person. I don't know how you could not be ill after all the torture.
And that's the question, right?
Yeah.
I mean, yeah. You know, whether or not she has mental illness or not is one point. But the other point, did she ever have a chance not?
Right.
To have mental illness? Like, I don't even...
Right. I mean, that doesn't necessarily mean that, you know, she would have killed anybody, but maybe if she'd gotten help or treatment or something.
Right.
It would have...
maybe so.
Not escalated.
Yeah.
But, I mean, that we can never know.
We can never, ever know.
Mm-mm. So, she went by the name Cammy Marsh Green, but that wasn't her only alias. She also went by Sandra Kretsch, Susan Lynn Blaovec, Lee Blaovec, and Lee is the name she actually really went by. She didn't go by Lean. Lee was the name she went by mostly. And Lori Christine Grody. I don't know how she chose her names, but she thought about it because
They're not simple names.
They're not simple. She probably had to take some time thinking about them too. And that was always interesting to me. It's like naming a child, but alter ego.
An alter ego, which seems not smart because they're very recognizable.
Right,
I'm thinking
yeah.
If you want an alias, choose John Smith.
Right.
This makes it much harder.
Right, exactly. non-porous surfaces, like where they found Eileen's palm print in the car, Peter Sims' car. They are more difficult to preserve, particularly in blood. Blood tends to flake and crumble and smear on smooth surfaces, and it can be really difficult to lift those off. So I thought that was really interesting. The Bureau of Criminal Apprehension in Minnesota has a whole article about porous and non-porous surfaces when it has to do with latent prints. It's fascinating. So I didn't know taking palm prints was a thing.
Yeah, they said that, and I kind of thought, I guess I've sort of seen that on procedural TV shows, or they've mentioned things, but I don't really think about the palm print as much.
No, but evidently they've been doing this for a long time. It became automated in 1999, where they have where they're able to scan it right into the computer. Mm-hmm. I don't know that they would put ink all over the hand.
Yeah, that would be a little
anymore.
Messy.
And but they would have with Eileen. I mean, that was the kind of...
Wow. I mean, that's just interesting. I mean, I feel like obviously it would help them because they want to match a palm print, right? Because people do touch. But how often do you... But it's about the fingerprint goes missing. Like, it flakes off, it smears, and then you still have a little bit of the palm left. Print. Not because right. people tend to leave palm prints without fingerprints.
Right. But I just didn't know that that was something that they collected, but evidently that's normal.
I didn't know.
No. And even, like, in the late 80s, early 90s, totally normal to take a palm print.
That's very interesting. Yeah.
So they have to be competent to die?
Yes, because you can't have death penalty for people who are insane.
Yeah, it's cruel and unusual punishment, correct, which I because did they, not realize.
They cannot understand that this is a consequence of a crime, so therefore they are unable to take that punishment. It's the same reason why, you know, we talked about insanity defense before, and it's right. the same thing. You know, are you even competent to stand trial? Because do you really actually understand that you have committed an offense and that there is a result from that? You know, and so the death right. penalty, it applies.
Right. And it's super interesting because it's really controversial, this whole idea that people are fit to die, that there's a big ethical dilemma that prison psychologists might be asked to restore competency so that those people may then be put to death. And the American Medical Association has put forth a statement indicating that providing this treatment is considered ethically unacceptable. So it's really very nuanced and confusing. And I'm sure that's why they found Eileen competent,
mm-hmm.
was because they didn't want to treat her anymore.
Well, and Jeb Bush needed a little bit of a hike
yeah.
for his campaign. That's and you fair. Know what? Frankly, she wanted to die.
And she did. Yeah.
So they kind of felt like, all parties win. But do they?
Yeah.
But
I mean, she was clearly not capable of making that kind of decision.
I mean, I know that death row was horrible for her. But it's a horrible place. So it doesn't sound right to say that, well, she was just so upset on death row and that's why she wanted to die. And you're kind of like, well, who isn't upset on death row? But I think you have to look more particularly about the fact that she forewent her appeals, that she fired her lawyers, that she made sure that she had control over her own case because defense attorneys were like, oh my gosh, you have to appeal this. This is not okay. And they were fighting for her. And she was like, shut up. Right. I want to die.
Right.
And you're like, well, everybody's sort of miserable on death row, right? But I think it's those actions that are very interesting. And then the fact that she had all of these delusions or psychological torture going on, you know, whatever you want to say.
Right.
Who knows? She had complained and filed actual complaints
yeah.
about poisonings and things of this sort. It wasn't a short-lived delusion. It was
no.
kind of a long-lived delusion.
Yeah. And we assume it's delusion.
We people do assume it was a delusion. I don't see where they did a whole lot of investigation into the whole thing.
Right.
What's weird is that her delusion made sense.
Right.
If you believed this idea that the cops did kind of let her go, right? Mm-hmm. Because she had hooked some cops before.
Right.
And that they knew that and all of that. If you believe all of that, it actually makes all the rest of her stuff almost makes sense, which is what's so weird about it.
Right.
Typically, you have to try way harder.
Yeah.
To make the dots
conspiracy
connect.
Theory.
Yeah. And in this case, it was kind of like, actually, I think, wasn't that on NCIS last season?
Yeah.
I feel like this plot's been written and it wasn't that hard to pull off on a basic procedural show. So weird.
Yeah.
I'm not advocating for her delusion. I'm just saying that in some cases, the Minority Report deserves a second look.
That's
fair. I gotta tell you,
you're not there.
I mean, it's not normal that I go the route of conspiracy, But this chick was her pimp. Let me just say that.
Really?
I have no evidence of this. I have nothing. I'm just looking at this story, and I think Tyria was her pimp. And I think really? When Eileen's face was on the news, Tyria dumped her and moved.
Yeah.
And then Eileen was heartbroken, threw the gun in the river, like, was all kinds of just a mess, went back to the bar, like, weeks later, like, was finally like, okay, well, I got to make money.
Yeah.
I don't know. No, there is something really awkward about that situation, and it feels like gaslighting.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm afraid of her.
Yeah.
I think that she's afraid of you.
It's easy to say that after the fact.
It really is easy to say that after the fact.
Yeah.
Right? Ugh.
And then I want to talk a little bit, just because I came across this article and it was interesting, that in the age of a pandemic, sex workers are struggling. That normally it's a recession-proof sort of job because people seek comfort when they're unhappy.
Right.
And they seek to celebrate when they are happy. So it tends to be pretty even. But it's a lot more dangerous to meet people face-to-face. And so they don't qualify for any assistance if people can't use their services. Again, this is an argument for legalization.
Right.
It provides these people some protections. One sex worker said, I can tell the day when everybody got an economic stimulus check because I'd see the clients again. They suddenly have money to see them. And then, of course, some of them have to figure out, how do I go about this? Can I make it safe? How much money do I need?
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, you got to eat and pay rent. And if you can't do those things, then what are you going to do?
Yeah. Well, it speaks to also, I mean, it's like social distancing. People are at home and people are working at home, including family members. So even if like a client has an opportunity to go partake, unfortunately, this is also a sticky place because usually people lie about this.
Right.
And so it means that they may not have an opportunity to get away the same way they typically would. And this is the part of the whole profession I hate, because there's victims
right.
for every, almost every consensual act between a sex worker and a client has a victim, because there's somebody being lied to about this. This
right.
is not things that people are like open about generally.
Right.
And so there's somebody at home that doesn't know it and is being
right.
betrayed or cheated on too often. And so
right.
I feel bad, but that means there's probably a lot of people who can't partake because they simply don't have the privacy they typically would.
Yeah. It's interesting. The whole article is a fascinating read. Weather does, in fact, play a role in decomposition, which we know.
We know.
But specifically in Florida, temperature is the number one thing that influences decomposition, and it being warm there
mm-hmm.
so much of the year really does affect how much.
Yeah, just like New Orleans.
Yeah. But Florida finally got its own body farm so that it can study forensically how bodies decompose in that environment. So
they can more accurately.
Right. The most famous one is in Tennessee. We have one just down the road from us here in Texas, which is part of a university system so that they can study it.
Mm-hmm.
It's very interesting. They finally got their own.
Boy, that seems like a long time coming.
Yeah, it seems like they should have had it before then. But, you know, they started creating it in 2017. Seems not early enough.
Yeah.
But,
I think behind the curve there a little bit.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woohooer, a hand clapper, a high fiver? I kind of like the high five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino-style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses, so don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void or prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere. This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
This next set of outtakes is from Fear City, all about the mobsters in the 80s, how they lost a lot of their power and clout, but what they did with that power when they had it in the 80s. They're still obviously very powerful organizations, but they don't quite have the same gravitas that they used to. So we talk about old phone tech, how recording remotely has some advantages, irony. We appreciate the perspective. We talk about an old bad movie. We learn more about Joe O'Brien. I explained the gasoline scheme, which was a major player in this whole show. And we talk about surveillance tech and automated assistance. That's extremely fair because my parents are not very much older than your parents.
No.
And I was in high school before we got a touch tone phone. We had a rotary dial phone.
No, ma'am.
It was after 1990.
No, ma'am.
Because it was a difference in cost and my parents didn't want to pay it.
Wow. Like, I get that I'm a spoiled brat, but I literally had my own phone line.
Yeah.
At that time.
Yeah.
Like, yeah.
Yeah.
That's...
No, it was a big deal for me to get a phone in my bedroom.
Yeah.
That I shared the line with my parents.
Okay, but was it clear?
No.
And could you see? Oh, man, that's fine. I had the clear one where you could see all the guts inside of it.
I loved those. My friends had those. I didn't have those because I had to buy my own dang telephone and it was cheap.
Yeah.
And I was not going to spend $20 on a phone when I could spend $11.99 on a phone.
Absolutely fair. I get it. It's
and
so
now
funny.
I spend $1,200 on my phone.
Yeah. But to be fair, that's like our access to everything.
Well, that's fair. Yes.
All right. I'm going to be a complete dork because I'm at home and I want a beer.
Oh, okay. Go ahead.
All right. I'll be right back.
All right.
Gotta keep it moving. So I'm running out there and I basically walk and run like a duck. Like, I have like tail feathers, you know, because my back has to stay the same. It's just like weird little waddle. And then I make funny sounds.
Was anybody even out there to laugh at you?
Oh, yes. Yes.
Oh, okay. Oh, okay. Well, good. Then entertainment. It's a service you provide.
That's right.
Drug trafficking. Let me say that again.
Oh, Universal Andrew Young. Basic.
Andrew Young.
No, Yang. Yes. Andrew Yang.
Yang. Yeah.
Sorry.
Andrew Yang.
Let me re-answer that. Andrew Yang.
Well, speaking of people trying to get ahead in the world, real life, I have a few people who we'd like to know a little bit more about.
Okay. Go for
unless
it.
You have unless you have something else to add for...
Well, we can talk about the terminology if you want to. We can add that in or not. It's up to you.
Yeah. Let's go ahead and add that in.
Okay, just in case. All right. Okay.
Yeah.
So what really thought... Back up.
So Michael Franzese. So she told the Washington Post that because there was a language barrier... So she told the Washington Post that because there was a language barrier, she told the Washington Post because there's a, oh, jeez.
Sorry. It was just too ironic. Oh.
I have a language barrier and I only speak one language. Oh, okay. All right, so then The Guardian had some interesting observations. Let me remind myself of what they are. So they really appreciated that it was told from the perspective of law enforcement, because very often in pop culture, when you have a movie or show that involves the mob, it's very much from the perspective of the mobsters. Like, you're kind of rooting for these anti-heroes. And they really appreciated that it was told from the opposite side. So procedurals, you know, we always get the law enforcement side usually, but it's not usually the FBI. It's usually like detectives and things like that. And then they talked about how they kind of made RICO a holy word. I was like, that's an astute observation. A holy word. Yes, it really was, because it was what they needed to be able to get this.
Actually, that brought up a whole thing for me, too. One of the reactions that I had, apart from being in stitches over the way they talked and then enjoying right. the whole, you know, undercover planting a bug situation. I think what I really enjoyed was watching the transition of the detectives and the police force from being beat cops, who were just higher ranking beat cops,
right,
to really truly being investigators who started to take the law and understand the law and build case and build then strategy around what the law was there. And I think we see this throughout the whole series, actually, that this continues to develop, this idea of how they use RICO. But the fact is that these detectives didn't even know this existed. It wasn't brand new.
No, it was nobody decade old.
It was a decade old. And so what's interesting is that they didn't quite understand how to do their job, because they didn't understand what the law afforded them or how the law guided them. And they could have ended up with cases that would have been thrown out, or they could have ended up with a really strong case. But either way, there had to be some sort of marriage of the beat cop mentality of getting in there, getting the job done and investigating, and right. having a bit of a intellectual perspective to say, okay, this is how we need to go about that. And I think from that time frame is where the modern detective is really born.
I really absolutely agree. It's interesting to watch.
You mentioned CNN, and I have to tell you, like, so I'm, you know, from Atlanta, really. And so mm-hmm. we used to do field trips down to the CNN Center all the time and all of this super stuff. Cool. And it was just such a fun kind of place to go and tour. It was really interesting. That whole area, yeah. super fun.
I imagine a lot of hustle and bustle and exciting and...
Well, they knew what they were doing. They set it up where it was easy to do a tour and not get in the way. You know, and you could cool. still do that. I mean, you could still, you know, but they did field trips. And yeah, it was like that open newsroom feel, where then the sets were like interspersed inside the newsroom. And then you could kind of see what was going on. Like, they created that whole feel, you know, it was kind of cool.
Super cool. Fear City is a title used before. There was a movie from 1984. It's considered a cult film, called Fear City, and it's described as a neo-noir erotic thriller.
What? Wait. I'm like,
oh, yeah, no. I looked at the IMDb pictures that are from this, and it's skin flick.
I've never
heard of it, because I think it may be too racy for cable in the late 80s or early 90s. It's a police detective and a nightclub promoter who are investigating a serial killer whose victims are strippers in Manhattan. It had some pretty famous people in it. Billy Dee Williams and Melanie Griffith were both in it. There's other people that you'd recognize, but you don't know their names, really. I don't know their names, so you probably don't know their names. Somebody out there probably knows their names, because they're relatively famous people, but you would recognize them. But this was like early in their careers.
I had to Google it, because I was like, I've got to see what this looks like. And right off the bat, I'm like, oh my gosh.
Do you see a lady in a thong? Is that the first thing you see? A lady in a teal thong?
No.
Oh, those were the first pictures I saw when I went looking. And I was like, well.
How about that? No, I got the basic movie poster. Oh. And it's so funny, because I was just talking about Major League, and look uh-huh. who was all in this. And it's like, hey.
It's like the cast of Major League.
Oh, my gosh.
It's the movie poster is like so cluttered 1980s.
Oh, it is quintessential.
Then there was Joe O'Brien. He was a feature in this, and he also wrote a book in the early 90s called Boss of Bosses. And he actually has a master's degree of social sciences from Syracuse University, which I thought was pretty cool. I'm like, oh, yay, like college educated people. This is awesome. Yeah. But the thing I wanted to note about him was that he had, over his 20 years with the FBI, a 100% conviction rate.
What?
I was like, he deserves a shout out for that. Because he was delightful interview and 100% conviction rate. I mean, I guess you could say that's maybe he didn't take very many chances.
I was about to say.
He didn't convict anybody that he didn't know he could get. Or he didn't indict anybody he didn't know he could get. But he indicted the people he knew he could get.
Yeah, that's very interesting. So, I mean, well, good for him. Good for him.
So how did that gasoline scheme work?
Oh, I don't understand that at all.
Okay, I didn't either. But on Reddit, explain like I'm five is the board.
I like it.
I'm okay, like, good. That's perfect. That's what I need.
Yes, me too.
So at that time, gasoline tax was paid, and I think it still is. It's paid just once. So they collect it at some point between the manufacturer makes it and sells it to a distributor.
Okay.
The distributor sells it to the retailer. Okay.
Okay.
So three people. So they either collect it from the manufacturer or the distributor or the retailer. Mm-hmm. I think retailer is probably common now.
Yeah.
But back then, they collected it from the distributor, the middleman.
Oh. Now that's a piece of the puzzle that makes it much more clear.
Yes. So they were supposed to pay the tax on every truck. So every tanker truck full of gasoline would pay their tax. They'd get a stamp that said tax paid. Mm-hmm. And then they'd sell it marked up enough to cover the tax and a profit to the retailer. And then the retailer would mark it up a little bit and sell it to the consumer.
Right.
Okay.
Okay, that makes sense.
Basically, what Michael Frenzies did was he set up shell companies. So a shell company would buy the gasoline at a high volume and a low price from the manufacturer. Then they would falsify a piece of paper that had the tax paid stamp on it so that they could turn around and sell it to the retailer. Instead of paying the tax, they would pocket the tax. Mm-hmm. So, because they'd falsified these documents. And at that time, they weren't great about getting the tax for each tanker. It was kind of an honor system. So they would say, pay us quarterly.
Yeah.
Because they didn't want to have to deal with it. Right. So by the time they realized that the company hadn't paid the tax, that shell company was closing or had business. Already closed. Yeah. So by the time the tax people realized they weren't getting paid, which, you know, they're like, oh, well, we'll give them another week or two because maybe they just didn't get it in on time or whatever. By the time they followed it, that first company that bought all the gas to begin with, it's closed,
right.
And they've moved on to another one. So it took them years to figure out how it was being done. They knew they were short the money. They didn't really understand how it was happening. So it's not particularly difficult. It's just, it's hard to find those missing pieces when you're going to the retailer and they're like, well, who did you buy your gas from? We bought them for this because they sold it to us the cheapest because they weren't actually paying the taxes on it. So, of course, they could sell it cheaper than anybody else.
Right. That's interesting.
They showed us their tax paid stamp. So they couldn't figure out how it was being done. It all looked like it was on the up and up.
That's interesting. And that's one of those things where I feel like this is actually true for a lot of different things. But it was just easier back then. In some ways.
Yeah.
To have these little, you know, schemes. Because I didn't even think about the fact that the distributor would pay the tax. Like, that's just right. What? That's not so much standard now. And so I was like, wait, what? That doesn't even make sense. But now that you've explained it, I totally understand. But how much easier was it to get away with some of those things then?
Oh, you know? So much easier. When it wasn't all electronic? Mm-hmm. When you had to write it down on a piece of paper?
Yeah. And then send that paper in to somewhere?
Uh-huh.
I mean... Yeah,
to somewhere inundated with paper.
Yeah.
So they didn't get to all the paper.
Exactly. Interesting. Yeah.
Microphones are much harder to detect if you can hide them because they don't... If they're hardwired to a surveillance system somewhere else, they're basically impossible to find.
Yeah, you can't find them at all.
Yeah, you have plugs in the wall, you have lamps, they read the same as lamps.
Yeah, I mean, you can find them. I mean, yes, you can,
but not nearly as easily as if they're putting out some kind of radio transmission.
Right.
UVF, something like that.
Right. I mean, if...
UHV, ultra high frequency wavelength.
Right.
Not UVF.
I mean, really, for like a radio-based bug, I mean, you could take a baby monitor and just kind of like, you know, and find it. But like, you can make a mic feedback. You just have to know how to make a feedback.
Right. You know. Right. But if you have it hidden well enough... Mm-hmm. It might be harder to find.
And actually, if it's really well done, it might be really hard to make it feedback. You know, so where you get... Because it's not connected to a speaker.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of the Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play the Godfather, now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
VGW Group, no purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions, 18+.
Everybody can hear, really. So It would be really tough to find that.
Where does that data go? Mm-hmm. Who else has access to it? What are they recording? You don't know.
You really don't know, which is why shout out to Apple, because Siri is not listening.
No, you have to activate her. And she's a little, based on the Apple products I have in my house, which is quite a few. my husband's very invested in that particular platform. She doesn't always listen very well.
No.
Sometimes I have to get her attention. And, that's why he's less excited about some of the other smart speakers out there, because he says, well, Apple's not trying to sell me toilet paper and groceries and electronics and clothing.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And I'm like, I mean, they're not whatever, using it man. For that. And, you know, with Siri, that's that idea of that's why she's slower. So that's why she gets worse reviews in some ways, because you do have to activate her. She doesn't learn as quickly. You know, it can be very troublesome. Whereas I'm sitting right here next to my A dot. And, you know, she's listening. But I did get that sweatshirt for pretty cheap. And I have to say thank you. Because I was looking for the sweatshirt, so.
Right. Exactly.
I mean, so, a week ago, that sweatshirt, literally, all I could find was something that was like $30. Did I just buy it for $20? I sure did. Thank you, ma'am.
Oh.
So maybe I am someone who is an early adopter. I sort of just give up my like, listen, whatever. I don't care.
Yeah. Just listen. As long as you give me the best price on stuff, it's okay.
Kind of a convenience hog.
Well, and I mean, there's been cases where somebody was murdered in a home and that particular device was listening and that company didn't want to give over the information, but ended up doing it.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you know, there's the one thing like, do I want them listening to everything? But do I want my murder recorded?
Well, and what's interesting is that they then waited for the proper warrants and solicitations to come through so that they didn't.
Which I appreciate.
I appreciate that.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
And that particular device, and we all know who we're talking about right now, even though we're trying really hard not to name her.
Yeah.
That particular device also, because they're always listening, has some certain safety and security features beyond just recording after the fact. For instance, you can turn on the alarm. So you can tell her you're going away, and it will actively listen for glass breaking and smoke alarms and certain types of things. And if it hears it, it will alert your phone.
Oh, that's pretty cool.
You can tell you're going to bed, and it'll do the same thing.
Yeah.
So
that's pretty cool.
It has some benefits in it, but again, that convenience, privacy balance, it has to be a personal decision.
Right. It really does. And you got to decide, is that right for me, my household, my family, my situation?
Exactly.
And now the outtakes from our episode on Tickled, which was a movie all about a quote-unquote tickling ring or competitive tickling, and how that was much more nefarious and not nearly as above board as even many of the people participating in it believed it to be. So Jackie has some weird imaginings, and we discussed the Tiger King a little bit. Can you sick INS on someone? We talk about the sequel that didn't happen. The above board world of tickling. Yes, there is tickling that is not nefarious, like the major players in Tickled were. They were nefarious. This guy, not so much. And the MMA tickle rules. Nigel Sniff. No, he's not my father-in-law sniffing the shoe. You have to listen to our live episode to understand that one. And who knows when you'll hear this, because this is all bonus material.
Exactly. Oh, this is funny.
Maybe we should record at night more often. You're punchy.
I am a night person as opposed to a morning person.
That's true.
It's fair. All right. So who is this Nigel? Who?
So this wild ride gets a little wilder and weirder because there's a follow-up documentary of like 20-ish minutes called The Tickle King.
Because all of a sudden I had these images running through my head of David D'Amato on the Tiger King's face next to tickling people. And I have this whole, my brain is on a rabbit trail. Nobody wants to follow me down.
I really, really don't, because I really only watched one episode of the Tiger King. And I was like,
I thought it was funny.
I'm laughing at the mentally ill. What? This seems...
the Tiger King himself was kind of just, I don't know. He seemed, I don't know what the right word is.
I don't know.
He actually seemed benign to me.
Okay.
Even though I know they tried to set it up as like, ooh, is he a murderer, you know, and all these things. He actually seemed kind of benign and just very eccentric. And, you know, maybe he has some questionable character traits in some ways. That he talks really nasty and he starts fights and... whatever, you know, like he kind of says what he thinks and it's kind of gross. But in general, he seems to actually kind of be a loving dude to the people around him. Huh. So it's a very weird thing. Anyways, that's another rabbit trail. I have more trails than rabbits today.
He went to the screening of the movie and...
Wait. Who went to the screening of the movie?
D'Amato.
Oh, I know. I just needed you to say it. Because I know it's hard to say it, but I was like, say it.
So it was David D'Amato and...
Kevin
Clark, who they went together. And there was a Q&A with Dylan at the end because it was a screening. It wasn't like a...
Right, it was like a film festival.
Right. And they had tickets to a bunch of screenings.
Mm-hmm.
And this particular one, they had a... Excuse me.
I feel like we should just start that whole section over.
Yeah, we really should.
Maybe we should start right with the HBOs. Because I went on a complete tangent. And then
I burped at the end of it. Okay.
Okay, let's go and back. We'll just start right here with
we'll
the...
We'll just start right over with the whole...
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So D'Amato surmises that David and Dylan are there on tourist visas, and he threatens them with INS.
This was the best. Like, this is in the follow-up. No, this is in the original.
This is the only the only time they meet him in the original film.
Oh, that's right.
He's because like, you're here in a tourist visa. I'm going to let INS deal with you.
That's right. Because in the follow-up, he's still threatening their status of... Oh, no, it was about filming.
Yeah.
Oh, cut all that.
Yeah, it doesn't matter. Yeah.
I'm making this all right for
fine.
You today.
No, it's fine. And then there's the sequel that wasn't.
The sequel that wasn't? Okay, tell me about this.
AV Club had a story that there was a tickling cell, sort of, that a bunch of U.S. Marines participated in Washington, D.C. from 2009 to 2010. And there was this whole, like, group of young men that were getting tickled for money. And if they got out of line, then the Marines who were running it would share it publicly or let their superiors know. And resulting in internal investigations and demotions. I mean, it's a bad thing. So, but he said there wasn't quite enough material there, and he didn't really want to further subject the participants to.
That makes sense. Yeah. Well, see, classy guys. They're always classy guys.
That's right. It seems that way.
Yeah.
It seems that way. And he started a firm called, I can't remember. So I really loved the balance that they included by having Richard Ivey as a part of this.
Yes.
So Richard Ivey creates tickle fetish videos, and there's no nefarious deception.
Right. It is just what it is.
It's like he legitimately is like, yeah, I like tickling, and I like watching people be tickled, and I like tickling other people, and I like being tickled, and other people like that, and I may have been able to make a job out of it. And
yeah,
you know, it is what it is. They interviewed him, and oh, he's a Florida man, but not the bad kind.
Oh, Florida man.
Yeah. And that it's really, you know, he talks about how much he appreciated that they were very open. They weren't very judgmental. He said he found them, the filmmakers, to be compassionately curious. And he says his website is absolutely an adult website.
Right.
Because he does have some nudity. But yeah.
And he just admits it. And it just, I don't know. There's, it's like the reason why those Halloween masks are so scary, when it's like just a mask with like the eyes and like the mouth. And like, it's like a almost face, but not really.
Uh-huh.
The same reason that we're so creeped out by something that looks almost human is exactly why I'm creeped out by this film.
Yeah.
And like by this stuff.
Yeah.
Because it's almost, but not quite.
Yeah.
And that is the most disturbing thing.
Right.
Because it's not even a gray area. It's like a, I don't know. There's
We don't have the vocabulary for this.
I feel like there is a vocabulary. It's just stuck. And I just, it's amorphous. It's,
And I don't really, that there's really don't have any problem with anybody who enjoys being tickled. It's the control and the power, and that makes it so gross.
Yes, it's the deception and the lying around it. That's what it is.
The MMA does not expressly forbid tickling. Jaina O'Brien Media was trying to encourage MMA fighters to use tickling as a technique in their fighting because they were filming the MMA matches and they really wanted tickled fetish videos of MMA fighters.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. But people on Reddit said, I wouldn't recommend it. Magnetic said, yeah, I wouldn't want to attempt it. If there's a 6'6" walking shoulder muscle charging at you with the full intent of tearing you limb from limb, my first reaction isn't, I bet he's ticklish.
Which couldn't was have awesome. Said it better.
And then we have David D'Amato's father was an attorney, and he started a firm D'Amato and Lynch. And they seem to be in a little bit of trouble these days.
Well, you know what? Because trust fund baby didn't do so hot.
Yeah.
In life. So yeah. That's not good.
Yeah. He'd passed away a few years ago.
Right. But yeah. I mean, that's a heck of a reputation and legacy to lay at your doorstep.
This is true. So the firm moved to smaller offices several years ago because they've lost a lot of clients and therefore employees, and they're being sued by their former landlord because they didn't pay the rent. And then in September of 2019, First Mercury Insurance Company had to file a lawsuit against the Manhattan law firm because they unethically deposited $1 million settlement into their operating budget account rather than into a trust. And then they used that money for their operating expenses. And then when First Mercury Insurance asked them to return the settlement funds, they refused.
Oh, well, too bad, so sad. It
seems like perhaps they're not as divorced from David D'Amato
as they tried to make it seem.
Well, I don't know that it really had anything to do with it, but they have some of the same character traits.
Well, that's what I'm saying, is that you can try to separate all you want to, but A, that legacy is going to follow you no matter what. But then it just sets the stage for any of the similarities to be amplified.
Yes.
Yeah, it's way more fun. Share. Let's do this together.
Send
us some messages. Hit us up on the DM. Send us some emails. You can find us on Facebook at...
All right. So right there at the end, I had a little blank on our social media, but I'm not having that now. You can find us on Facebook, Killer Fun Podcast, exploring the intersection of crime and entertainment. You can find us on Twitter at Killer Fun Pod, or you can send us an email, killerfunpodcast@gmail.com. Thank you so much for listening. We know you take the time to listen to us. We don't just come on a radio somewhere. You actually make a choice. And man, do we really appreciate it. We appreciate it so, so much. If you've enjoyed what you heard today or what you hear any other time that we have an episode out, please share it with a friend, because it's so much more fun to listen to these and then talk about it with a friend. And if you did enjoy it, please rate and review anywhere you get your podcasts. We would love to hear from you. And if for some reason you can't give us a 5-star review, do send me an email, killerfunpodcast@gmail.com. And so that I can take your suggestions or criticisms or things that you loved. I love hearing about the things that you loved under advisement so that we can make our show better. Until next time, be safe, be kind, and wash your hands.